Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 24th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Gardening Today, and today we welcome Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They will be on the line to answer your questions. If you got a gardening question, call early. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. There's no guarantee we'll get to all the calls or all the emails, but first come, first served, and we'll do the best we can. Fred and Greg, gardening. Can you dig it? Coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your gardening questions are Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. Fred is the director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. You got a gardening call, question, call us early. I beseech you to call early, otherwise you'll be left on the line and you'll be irritated. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, same drill. We're not going to get to all of them. We'll do the best we can. And the number, once again, is 800-348-2551. Still a couple of open lines at this moment. Fred and Greg, welcome to Vox Pop.
Hey, it's great to be back, Greg.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yep. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you guys here. How are things going? How are things wrapping up for the season over at the Landis Arboretum, Fred?
You know, we're doing pretty good. We had a 5K race, which was, we canceled all the spring events and into the summer, and we did have a 5K race in August, which went really, really well. We staggered the starting times. We staggered the individual starts, and it was a pretty much, I would say, exemplary race. Very, very well run. Pun intended. And then we just wrapped up our fall plant sale, which was really, really, really great to be able to do that. We needed to kind of finish the year kind of strong, and we had a lot of plants. We had perfect weather, and we had an incredible turnout, and everything went really, really well. So we're doing really well. We put about 35 trees in probably the last 2 weeks, and we've been trying to keep them all watered because things have been pretty dry out there. But yeah, Otherwise, we're doing really good over here at Landis Arboretum.
Outstanding. Greg Ward, how are things going over at Ward's Nursery?
Oh, yeah, still very busy. Gardening is, you know, the new fun occupation, I think.
And it sure is.
So things are going well. You know, they always say fall is for planting, as Fred just, you know, said. He planted some trees, and September is a great month. But October is lining up to probably be a really nice month. It's mild. Maybe it's going to rain on Monday. But either way, even if it doesn't rain, planting, you know, in the next 3 or 4 weeks, watering them weekly or even more frequently because it's so dry for the next few weeks, we'll get everything settled in. So I think if you have something to a project to do, it's a great time to do it.
You know, I don't know whether it was sheer luck or whatever, but this year our vegetable garden has been tremendous. I mean, we haven't had tomatoes. I mean, a couple of years we had the blight. Last year, I don't know what happened. I think we might have given up. This year we got so many tomatoes. We got green peppers. Squash and eggplant. It's like, I don't know. Maybe Mother Nature said, "All right, you've been locked down a long time.
That's fantastic.
I'm going to throw you."
You know, part of it was the weather. Although it has been dry, and that has been challenging, but you know, sometimes with the wet weather and the real high humidity and moisture, we get a lot of those fungal problems, which you know, a lot of times those tomatoes get and things like that. So, although you know it has been dry, I think that you know a lot of people have said the gardens have been pretty good as long as you can keep moisture on them. There's been less diseases across the board, I think, on a lot of the plants, and not only the garden plants, but even the trees and shrubs.
Right. Yeah, the dry weather is always good for the garden as long as you can water. And again, everyone was home, so watering seemed to be an easy thing to accomplish this year. I think you're not alone, Ray. I think everyone, almost everyone, had a great season with their vegetables.
That's really great. Now, listen, we have a stack of email messages here, and I got to tell you, it's unbelievable. The phone lines are still loading up. So before we take our first break in 5 or 6 minutes, let's try to dispatch a few of these emails, and then we will take a break and then hit the phones. The number, by the way, is 800-348-2551. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward join us for this edition of The Gardening Show. This one is from Steve. And Steve writes, I cut my Siberian iris down to perhaps 6 inches in mid-August because I had the time and many were sprawled on the ground. Last year I did nothing till early April and it was a lot more work, but the bloom was fine this year. Since then, I have additional new growth on many, but I suspect later cleanup will still be easier. What should I have properly done? Did I do any harm? Since I'll be cutting again, how long should I cut it? My guess is doing nothing till after the end of the growing season would have been best. And that's from Steve.
Yeah. Let me take that one, Fred?
Sure.
Yeah, sure, if you want to.
So he did no harm the first time, for sure. You know, by August, Siberian iris, German iris, the native one, the versicolor, blue flag, they're all pretty well tired out. The only iris that still sort of may have some interesting structure, but post-bloom would be, the Japanese iris, the Insada iris. So usually when you're out there in August, there's a lot of things that look a little tired that are in the perennial category, and cutting them back then is okay. He will need to clean them up a little bit more, but it kind of comes down to aesthetics. If you're in the garden in August and it doesn't look great, yeah, you can go ahead and cut those back, and it would be okay. If he waited till now or October, that would have been fine as well.
Okay. You know, by the way, these emails, this one, the last one that you just answered, and the next two came in about an hour before the show started. So people are excited to see you both on the show. This is from Dee in Cornwall on Hudson. We would like to plant a flowering tree that produces fruit for pollinators, birds, and animals. We get a maximum of 3 hours of direct sunlight. Can you think of anything, preferably native to the Northeast, that could thrive in those conditions? And would this be a good time to plant? We'll do that one for Fred.
All right. Well, certainly a great time to plant, as we had mentioned, as long as you can put water down. This is exemplary. And they're looking for fruit for bees and butterflies. Is that correct? Not so much edible fruit?
It just says
for people, that is.
It just says produces fruit for pollinators, birds, and animals. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, there's a lot of different things you can use. Certainly apples work really, really well. I don't know in the terms of 3 hours of direct sunlight. There's a lot of factors involved with that, because some people will say, well, I only have 3 hours, but really they're getting light before that and after that. So certainly apples work, pears work. All of those are things that both pollinators love. As well as people, and they do really, really well. Crab apples, if you're not really looking for so much edible fruit for people, you could get away with definitely crab apple trees. They work really well. They're tough. They can tolerate some shade. They definitely want more sun than shade. All of these plants will want more sun than shade, but that filtered light would also work for them as well. And if you are getting any kind of these varieties, you want to look for resistant varieties. There's a lot of different problems that occur with plants, and if you get a resistant variety, you're going to be ahead of the game. So no matter what you pick, try to get that resistant variety. And resistant doesn't mean you're not going to get any problems with the plant. It just means that you're typically going to get less of those problems. And a lot of times with, like, for example, crab apples, you're going to get apple scab, you're going to get powdery mildews, you're going to get rust diseases. And if you get a resistant variety, you're going to have a lot better turnout. There's also something called persistent fruit. And persistent fruit means it'll hang on until pretty much wildlife picks it off. And in the arboretum here, we have a lot of varieties of crab apple, for example, and they are resistant, and they are also very persistent. And you will see, literally full-size turkeys in those branches once the food sources start to get a little bit drier. They'll fly right up in those branches. I've seen turkeys, like, bending branches down to get those apples, and they'll stay right there till the snow comes or the animals get them. Winterberry holly is another one. It's another great shrub. It's not really a tree. And that's going to get fruit into that winter month. So anytime you can get fruit that stays later, that's going to end up being the real recipe for those critters to come in. Mountain ash is another great tree. And that one can take a little bit more, perhaps, shade than the crab apples. And mountain ash will also produce an incredible amount of fruit for birds, especially. But all the critters love them, all the pollinators, the bees as well.
All right, we only have 1 minute before the break, but this is from Sue in Albany. Maybe you guys can answer this one quickly. Sue writes, I have a Dawn Redwood tree that is about 10 years old. It's been healthy. This year, however, the leaves never fully developed or opened up, and the tree hasn't grown much this season. What could be the cause of this? I've attached a couple
drought.
Pictures, but you guys can't see the pictures.
Yeah, it might be drought-related, assuming that there's no other physiological condition, like it's been here a while, and as long as the roots and the flare of the tree look good and the depth, it's been doing good every year. This has been a dry year. They like some moisture. The Dawn Redwoods at the Arboretum, one of my favorite trees, by the way, but they've been doing really, really well. But you can see the growth rate this year is a little bit less than normal, and you know, most of that is because of the just persistent dry weather. They do like a little bit of moisture.
I would just add that if it's truly stunted, and that's, you know, that's not helpful, and it is getting late to do a lot about that, but watering the tree would probably be the single best thing you could do.
Absolutely.
Let's take a quick break here. Greg Ward and Fred Breglia join us. It's The Gardening Show. We will go to the phones in a moment, 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, The Gardening Show. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. A reminder that the WAMC lockbox is open, and we hope to finish up the fall fund drive today or tomorrow. And WAMC.org is the website if you want to make your secure online pledge. Gardening today on Vox Pop. Greg Ward and Fred Breglia join us, and let's hit the phones. John and Canaan. John, you're first.
Hi, Ray. Thanks very much.
Sure.
I've got two questions. One is about a tree that is having a hard time, and the other is about a follow-up question to your earlier remarks about irises. The tree is a honey locust, and it's about 5 years old. It's probably about 20 feet high. And this year, I'd say about 65% of the leaves started to brown out, probably around July. And they're still in that condition. I suppose it's the drought. I didn't water the tree. The question is survivability. Is it likely a tree that has been brown since, let's say, 60% brown since July is going to make it through the winter till next year? And the second question about irises, is it okay to divide irises at this time of the year?
I guess I'll just touch on that tree one first, and then we'll let Greg finish up with that iris question. But in terms of the tree being brown, first off, the there's a few things that can cause that. There could be some caterpillars. There could be some webworms. I'm not sure if you've noticed any of that, any feeding, any types of insect feeding on the leaves, or just brown. So generally, if it's just brown and, you know, assuming there's no other underlying issues. The drought this year has been really hard, and you know, things being relatively, you said 5 years old, so that's not overly old. The good news is that they're tough trees, and even though a tree browns out in the middle of summer and it's retained most of its leaves, you're probably going to be good. Now, you know, Greg had mentioned before, one of the things, you know, that's going to help trees right now is watering, including that Dawn Redwood question from before. But a lot of people realize this time of year, well, you know, it's shutting down. They don't really need as much water. And the truth be told is that they need a lot of water right now, and this is the time to really give them some good watering, thorough watering. They're going to store a lot of water for next year. They're going to store a lot of energy for next year, and the time they start to really bring that in is now. So start watering it thoroughly once a week, and you know, next year if you see that, you know, maybe jump on the water train. They don't need a lot of water, but they do need some water, and you know, especially once in a while. So I think you'll be fine with that.
I'll do it this afternoon.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Greg, on the irises.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So back there in August, when you're looking at your irises and they're looking pretty tired, is a really great time to consider dividing them. And you certainly still have plenty of time to do that right now, well into September. Okay. You know, it's August is ideal. Gives them, you know, a good 6 weeks to reestablish. but irises are very tolerant of winter, so doing it a little bit later is still just fine.
John, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum join us today. And Ted in Shelburne, Vermont. Ted, you're up.
Yes, thank you very much. One is I really enjoy gathering my own food before dinner and enjoy eating weeds. And I wonder if one of your websites perhaps covers like nutrition and or edibles like nettles. Boy, everybody hates what nettles have done to their ankles as a kid, but it's pretty nutritious, I think, and pretty easy to harvest if you do it my way and have it with your food. I'll do my little list, and then you can pick and choose, but I'm interested in real nutritional information on plants called weeds. And I have a number of cayenne peppers, which are, you know, I have a decent supply already red. Is there anything to, like, the old way of pulling the whole plant and roots out and hanging it somewhere for the stragglers to get redder after the season? I covered up, and I have good plants going after 3 days of covered up nights. Butternut squash, is there anything to, or what is there to, like a dip in a very dilute Clorox or something before you give it the warm cure and then storage in a cooler place? That's a good list. Thank you.
That's a fine
I'll
list.
Listen here.
I hope I took notes. All right.
I
who
hope
wants,
you did, too.
Who wants first?
Yeah, right out of the gate, I'd say, good man for eating nettle. I also eat a lot of weeds, and nettle is an unbelievably nutritious food source. In fact, there's an old story of some Tibetan monks, I believe, that were that lived for most of their lives eating almost nothing but nettle. Huh. So it's very nutritious because it's very wholesome. And you know, hey, anytime you can, you know, get back at a weed for growing in the wrong place by eating it, that's, you know, taking it to the next level. We at the Arboretum will a lot of times put up, especially on the Arboretum's Facebook page, Landis Arboretum, often does a lot of foraging type workshops. We didn't do one this year, but we probably will next year. And we often put lots of different things on those Facebook pages, even our website. This year I did one on garlic mustard, eating garlic mustard, another one of these ones that's also brought over for culinary reasons and became obviously a weed. But, you know, a lot of these weeds are really good. So, you know, good for you on that. Now, in terms of the actual nutrition of those weeds, you know, I don't know if, you know, if we cover all the, you know, in-depth analysis of what the nutrition is, but there's a lot of information on a lot of these plants because they are nutritious. They've been around for a long time. So if you dig into Google a little bit, you know, obviously pick and choose what you read, get it from a good source, you're going to find a real lot about that. And all those
wishing I've been wishing someone would get a grant.
I would
cover that.
I could
Thank
add
you.
there's a fellow who lives out in Eastern Mass. His name is Russ Cohen, and he has a book called Edible Wild Adventures. He makes it to the Berkshires fairly often, and I would definitely look him up. The book is great. He's an extremely knowledgeable fellow about all, you know, foraging in general and wild edibles.
All right.
Super.
The squash is the last one, the squash thing?
Yes.
I believe so.
So
ripening red peppers.
Hell yeah.
But
all right.
Squash,
Ted,
yes.
It's going to be the Ted and Shelburne, Vermont show if we don't move it along here.
One more.
So you can definitely, you know, like tomatoes, you can pick peppers and keep them inside if they've been frosted and the plants are finished. You can, you know, pick the fruit, bring it in, and it will ripen at room temperature in a similar way. And, you know,
peppers are
pretty tasty even when they're not the color you think they're supposed to be yet. You know, I mean, if they're red peppers and they're still green, they're going to work. The squash, it's still, you know, they still might not be completely ripe, and it's best to leave them out there, especially now with this next 2 weeks or so or more of mild weather. Even if the plants have been damaged, just leave them on the vine. Don't pick them. Because they are going to do a lot of ripening in the next few weeks just outside. And I have never, I've never thought that you had to do any kind of treatment when you store them, simply, you know, keeping them cool and ideally, you know, in a darkish place. I usually just throw them in my basement, which, you know, stays in the high 50s probably, and it works out just fine.
All right, Ted, we lost Ted there, but I think he'll probably be able to hear what you said if he's listening on the radio. So appreciate that very much. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And let's go to Jim in Peru. Jim.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering, I have about an acre of land, and it's mostly goldenrod, and I'm wondering if I should cut it all down and if there's something else I can put up, or is that environmentally friendly?
Oh, it's very friendly, because it's that goldenrod you're looking at is probably 7 or 8 different species of goldenrod. You know, it's not there, and I'm sure there's several plants in between them that, you know, were in bloom or, you know, certainly flowering back in June, July, and August, just maybe not as showy. So never a bad thing to have a field of goldenrod, lots of pollinators like that. Sometimes you can let it diversify a little more and allow it to, you know, grow up with some shrubs, some woody plants. There's also sometimes the issue of some invasives might move in there as well, so you get the sort of a 6 of 1, 6 of 2 kind of thing. I think if you cut it and you know, to a you know, in this, cut it now, cut it again in the spring early, you can eliminate the goldenrod certainly and bring it back to a meadow or a field that would be hayable if that is your intention. But in terms of wildlife, you know, there's nothing wrong with a field full of goldenrod.
Yep, and if you're going to maintain that field, what we do at the Arboretum, we have a lot of goldenrod, and we like it, a lot of pollinators, like Greg said. But, you know, if you are going to want to just maintain it so that woody plants don't take over, a lot of shrubs might come in if you don't do anything. We do brush hog the fields, but we do it very late season. We wait for all the flowers to be done and all the ground nesting birds to be gone, and the pollinators are, you know, not really, they've got what they pretty much need for the winter. And then real late season, before the snow really starts to come, we'll just pick it out and do a brush hog, quick brush hog once a year, and that'll maintain that forever. You'll be able to keep that growing without having a lot of other woody competitors come in and trying to take that field over.
We are joined today by Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum and Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery. It's Gardening Today on Vox Pop, and the number to call is 800-348-2551. Mark is in Deerfield, Massachusetts. Mark.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. My wife planted some hydrangeas this year, and they're doing very well, but they have no flowers. We were told that possibly there's too much nitrogen in the soil, and we don't know how to get rid of that or to change that pH.
Greg.
Okay.
You said me. So, you know, it's the hydrangea question always starts with which variety or species or selection of hydrangea do you have? We can narrow that down. What color were the flowers supposed to be?
More on the purple side.
Yeah. So the purple ones are the macrophylla or serrata types. Usually macrophyllas are those. They're often referred to as mop head. They're sort of these pom-pom-like flowers that bloom June, mm-hmm. July. There's a lot of varieties now that are supposed to be constantly blooming or repeat blooming through the summer. And all of them are a little tricky to get to flower well in the cooler areas of various counties. Now, Deerfield, if you're on the river, it's probably not bad at all. It's probably a pretty good spot there. You're probably getting, you know, close to zone 6. The number one thing to remember is as we go through winter and we get to spring again, is that you shouldn't prune those plants back, that the wood that's there now is setting flower buds for spring. And what we do in the Berkshires is then take it the next step further, is to try to protect that wood so that it, in fact, is alive when we get to spring and sprouting those flower buds rather than sprouting directly from the ground, because the ground shoots will not have flowers formed on them. And what we suggest to do with that is, as we get to November, December, is to actually kind of bury the plant. We call it winter mulching, and using a reasonably heavy material, ideally compost, is great. You can use garden soil. You can use a fine mulch out of a bag if you need to. And literally making a little mound where the plant is and allowing the stems that you did not yet prune to stick out of that mound. We get to spring, you pull the mound away. Yep, you pull the mound away. There may be a few dead twigs you can prune out, but at that point, you should have some flowers on the plants. Going forward into spring, it is recommended to fertilize the plants, and including some nitrogen in that fertilizer is typical and okay. They are heavy feeders, and that's not going to be a big deal at this point for the spring blooms, but it's going to be a big deal for them to regenerate those blooms as we go into next summer and then into the spring of 2022.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Here's one that Fred can handle. Harriet in Northwood, Connecticut. Harriet, you're on.
Hi, and Ray, thank you so much for everything you do. You're brilliant and hysterically funny. Thank you. I have two 25-foot hemlocks that have been growing in an area along the border of my property for quite a while, and they've gotten too tall. I can't see the sunsets, and I'm not wanting them to be as tall as they are. Am I able to top them?
Well, you know, the short answer of that is yes. You know, typically we don't like to use the word top, although that's kind of what you're looking for. It's
Why?
More of a heading back.
Why do you want to use that word?
Well, you know, it's a bad tree practice because when you come in and you sort of haphazardly top a tree,
I never
cutting
think
off
of doing branch. It, except in this case, I really want to do it.
Right. There are sometimes reasons to make a tree sort of shorter or narrower. And what you would do is called a reduction cut or a reduction type of pruning. So you could, in essence, come down to main leader. You're obviously going to need to get somebody in there with, you know, a good size ladder, probably like an orchard ladder, 13-foot orchard ladder or something like that. And I have done this with trees in the past just for that exact reason, where the plant is just getting too big for the spot where it is. And now, and you know, they're kind of slow growing, so it takes a while to get, you know, out sort of outgrow its space, but you don't want to take the trees down. So you can come back in and cut back to a, you know, I would try to avoid going to too large of a trunk cut, and cut back to some other lateral branches down in there. And then you could even retrain one of the new leaders when you're up there, or when the person's up there, to sort of retrain or bend a new leader, and that would train a new top. It often will make them a little bit bushier, but I will say that it will hold for a long time before they start to get much taller again. It'll sort of stunt them. It does work. Is it ideal? No, but as long as it's not just haphazardly just chopped, but it's actually reduced to another lateral, you could get away with that. And as long as the person's skilled, I have done that for people in the past, 20 years ago probably, and they're still in the yards. Like, I drive by them, I still see them. I'm like, wow, they are fatter, but they didn't get that much taller. It really does work pretty well for a hemlock.
Well, is there sort of a rule of thumb as to how much one can take off? I'm thinking of a third.
Well, you know, you never want to prune more than a third of anyone's pruning session. So that's a good rule to follow. I would err more on maybe the side of a quarter if you're taking the top down, because you just don't want to cut too thick of a trunk section. Ideally, it'd be a little thinner of a trunk section. The thinner the trunk section, probably the more better the job is going to be. But obviously it's got to be far enough down to where you feel happy with that. And then it will stay really wide and it won't get overly tall. And I think you'll be able to live with that for many, many years to come. So just on the side of a little less. You can always take more off, but we can't glue these branches back
up. Well, that's true. Yeah,
I definitely. Can I just say that at 25 feet, 25 feet, I think she should hire somebody.
You should hire someone for that.
I'm 74 years old. I'm no longer doing this myself. I will hire somebody.
I kind of figured that you might be hiring someone for this job. But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Getting an arborist in there might be, look for maybe a certified arborist. And not to say that other tree people aren't good, but that's a good way to make sure that the person who's doing it is qualified. You can find a certified arborist near you by going to a website if you're online, treesaregood.com.
Treesaregood.com. Treesaregood.
Yeah, it's put out by the International Society of Arboriculture, and then you can enter your zip code, and you'll find an arborist near you. And if you have trouble using that, you can always shoot me an email, fred@landisarboretum.org, and I'd be happy to steer you in the right direction as well.
All right, Harriet, thanks a lot. We got to take a break here. Fred Breglia is here from Landis Arboretum. Greg Ward as well from Ward's Nursery. It's gardening. The number is 800-348-2551, and we'll be back. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop today. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551, the number. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward join us via the telephone. And gentlemen, let's try to lower the stack of emails here a little bit before we get back to the phones. This one came in very early in the program from Ann in Adams. Ann says, I'm planting tulip bulbs in pots this year. My question is, can I leave the pots outside all winter, or should I keep them in the garage? By the way, they are large plastic pots, and that's from Ann in Adams.
I would definitely recommend keeping them in the garage. Ideally, you want everything to stay cold, not change temperature, and the garage would be perfect.
Okay. This is from Christine. Can you please tell me why my blackberries grow and grow their branches but never have berries? They're very healthy looking and grow like crazy. I planted them 10 years ago, thornless. And that's from Christine.
I'm with her. Blackberries tend to do that a little bit, but I have not always had great experience, but pruning them in the spring, and that's actually a word that I know Fred's not going to like, but topping them.
Well, it's okay with a blackberry.
Oh, okay. So that you have this 4 foot long cane. That's the new cane, and hopefully she's cleaning out her old canes. You know, all the old dead wood should be taken out right now or first thing in the spring. She has all those new canes that are there that are going to be the place where the flowers should be next year. But by shortening them, taking the top half or third or more, making each cane now maybe 3 feet off the ground, will allow them to branch, and that branching should develop flowers.
All right, this one is for Fred. This is from Andrew. When is the best time to prune a newly planted Coosa dogwood? Also, what's the best pruning method?
Yeah, well, first off, it's newly planted. The general rule is you don't want to plant the first year that you plant, because you really want that tree to establish roots and establish itself in the new site. And every pruning cut is an injury, so it tends to put a lot of energy to try to fix those injuries. So you want to wait for year two, and certainly dead wood is a priority, taking out any of the dead wood crossing branches. Getting a good handle on how to make a structural pruning cut is going to be, certainly one of those things that I would say you need to definitely know before you move forward. There are those sort of free consumer diagrams online through the treesaregood.com website. So, checking that website out is going to give you an idea of how to make those cuts. And then the timing on this, generally right in the middle of summer, you could do a little bit of selective pruning on a lot of ornamentals. In fact, so many ornamentals do really well from the second part of June through July. And I do a lot of pruning here at the Arboretum during those months. This is selective pruning, not doing a really harsh, heavy cut, but you still could take a quarter of the tree's branches off at any one session. But I always like to say, you want to have a reason to prune. Just because it's summer doesn't mean it's prune time, or spring, it's prune time. You really want to have a reason for that. And one of those might be, you want to create good structure. And that's one of the things to focus on with a new tree. You want to maintain a nice, good structure. And, there's sort of some great little guidelines, but I like to say the 5 steps for pruning young trees, really 4 steps, but it's been elaborated to 5. But really, you want to look at training that new leader, selecting permanent scaffold branches that are going to be on that tree permanently. You get to choose the lowest permanent branch. So even though the branch may be quite low right now, you may not want that branch there. So later you might have to come back and take those off. and development of those branches and development of the trunk, so you have a nice straight leader for quite some ways up, is going to be one of the probably biggest factors. So learning the good cuts, go to treesaregood.com for the diagrams. Think about no pruning for the first year, dead wood any time of year, maintain a central leader, and then start to work on pruning of the main branches or the scaffold branches and developing them to create some good structure. Good structured trees generally are the ones that stay through the winter storms. Bad structured trees are the ones that generally break apart. I think the latest statistic was over 90% of the tree failures are trees that have structural defects. So if we can just maintain some good structure early on, that means that you're in like the very small percentage of a tree failing. And that's, let's face it, a tree in your yard should be like a good investment, should keep growing. And the last thing you want to do is split apart because it has bad structure.
All right.
I'd be happy to address more questions in that regard if they wanted to send me an email for more in-depth, fred@landisarboretum.org.
Splendid. We have so many people on the line. One more email, and then we'll go back to the phones. Brian in Saratoga, hang in there. You're next. This one came in from Michelle. And Michelle says, I have the good fortune of having 5 yards of compost delivered. Can I spend it now? Secondly, I know peonies don't like to be too deep. How best to add compost to peonies?
Yes. So I'll do that one.
Sure.
So you can definitely do it now. If you have been on top of your game and you've gone out and cleaned up any of your annuals that you added to your perennial borders, or your garden is basically open and ready to go, you've weeded, the mulch isn't in the way, then you can start applying compost now. Fantastic. I would definitely go for that. And then for peonies, you're not adding 6 inches of compost. You're going to add, 1 or 2 inches, and you're going to gently incorporate it around the plant. And so in the end, it kind of disappears a little bit. It's not really adding. It falls in between the cracks.
Okay, fair enough. Yep. Let's jump back to the phones right now. And Brian in Saratoga, you're on. Brian.
Hey, Ray. Hey, just to piggyback on the last caller, you're a total pro, and what a great sense of humor you have.
Oh,
believe
gosh.
Me, all of us listeners love you.
Have I died? Hey, okay. All right. Go ahead.
My wife and I just planted some climbing hydrangea a couple days ago. Do we need to cover them in the winter, or what do we need to do to kind of gradually, have the thing, become dormant between now and then, so it'll have good health in the spring and growing?
Yep. I would just mulch them in if you haven't already. Make sure that the plants are at the proper depth. In other words, not planted too deep. They sort of at the same level they came at in the container, and mulch them, and then definitely water them thoroughly once a week between now and when it really gets cold. And the watering this time of year is the most probably important thing of all. I wouldn't put much fertilizer on them now. I'd wait till spring to try to start giving them a little bit of plant food, and you're going to want to give them a little supplemental water through next season during the drought periods, once a week, thorough saturation, usually enough. Don't need to cover them. They're real hardy. They're one of my favorite climbing plants. Love them. Love climbing hydrangea. Can't get enough of those.
Hey, yeah,
okay.
And I just add that what I talked about hydrangeas before, it was about that specific one, and it's the only one that needs some protection.
All the other
hydrangeas will do just fine on their own.
Yep, nothing to worry about in terms of the hardiness on the flowers on the climbing hydrangea. Good point to clarify that.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yep.
Hey, Brian,
good luck.
Thanks,
they're hardy.
Man.
You'll love them.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gardening Today with Greg Ward and Fred Breglia. Laurel in Stone Ridge, you're on.
Hi. My question is, when can I prune lilacs? They're very leggy. I'm getting blooms every spring and, early summer, but they really need a haircut. So when's the best time?
Right after they bloom.
Sorry.
Yeah. Isn't that always a conundrum, Fred? Exactly when is the best time? Because you don't want them to be too leggy, but you do want them to bloom. It's always sort of tricky, but basically, rather than cutting them down, taking out those heavy leaders, right, would be the best thing.
Yeah, you generally try to want to reduce it. Once you have an established shrub, and that means it's been growing there for a while and it's producing larger canes and it's getting some new new stems coming in, you generally want to take out about maybe 25 to 30% of the largest canes every year. And you take those, when I say canes, we're talking about stems, and you take those down fairly low to the ground, and then the newer, younger ones are replacing those older, leggier ones. And if you take out a quarter of them every year, then it always kind of maintains itself. But sometimes they kind of get away from us. We don't plan ahead far enough. And there are times to do more different types of pruning, including rejuvenation pruning. But I would start by, doing this pruning after they bloom. And then this year, you know, coming in 2021, they might still be a little leggy. But if you planned it right, then in 2022, you should have a pretty good shrub with the proper pruning, about 30% off at one time. And then you could also shape them. Certainly, you know, if there are some of the younger ones that are just getting too long and wispy, you can cut back to another intersecting bud or node. And the deadheading your flowers is always actually quite good, especially with lilacs. They just really respond to it because they put so much energy into setting seed that as soon as they get done flowering, if you take those seed heads off, all that energy goes back to more flowers for you for the following year. So those those are pretty much the way that I would proceed. And that would all occur, you know, pretty much right after they bloom, as close to after they bloom as you can.
Laurel.
So is it safe to cut them now?
What's that?
Is it safe to cut them now?
No, I would wait till after they bloom, and this is going to be a late spring. This is not going to be something if you take them now, you're going to for one thing, the trees are going to be going through a different physiological process of the shutdown process right now into heading into dormancy. And also, all your flowers for next year are on those plant stems right now. So any pruning at all, it means less flowers for you next year. So it's more optimal. You're not going to gain anything by doing it now. You're going to gain quite a bit by doing it after they bloom.
Got it. Unrelated question. Is there any regional approach to the stiltweed invasion? Is DEC or anyone looking at what we can do to remove the stiltweed from our area?
You want to take what the stiltweed? Was it stiltweed?
Yes, the stiltweed.
Yeah, you're having a lot of that in your yard, or just a general question about the whole area?
Well, I have it along my driveway and certainly see it in our area. It's very invasive.
Right. And if you kept mowing it down or string trimming it down, generally mowing, to my knowledge, can get it taken care of pretty easily in a yard. In a bigger picture scenario, it's not as simple. But if you have a patch of it in your yard and you don't want it there, you could definitely keep string trimming it or mowing it if you can with a mower. That's going to eradicate it.
Okay. Laurel, thanks a lot.
Just don't let it regrow. It's kind of like the Japanese knotweed.
Yep, sure is. Let's go to Jess in Brunswick. Jess, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So my question is about broccoli. We had a pretty large and successful garden this year, but the only thing that didn't do well was our broccoli. I don't know if it was the spacing or what, but we cleared them out and we left one single one. They were about 18 inches apart, and that was the only one that came up with an actual head.
Yeah.
Broccoli. But everything else got a little head and then just flower or nothing at all. So
broccoli can be a little tricky especially when you're transplanting them. If you're buying starts and then putting them in, is that what you did? Or did you, or you started your own?
Too.
So I didn't.
Yes.
So what often happens is if you have a start, it's in a little cell pack. It gets they actually get a little old, a little aged in there. And if that occurs and you transplant them, they don't always form a head. They will sort of just leaf out, and you miss that opportunity. That's number one. Number two, it was very warm this year, and so broccoli, as we went into the summer, was not having a great time. They'd like it a little bit cooler. So my suggestion would be if you're growing starts and you're transplanting, to do it with very young plants, so nice fresh roots in there, nothing too root bound, and then to really consider doing some direct seed sowing in the garden for a second or third crop. In other words, don't rely on 4 or 8 plants. if you really like broccoli, kind of overdo it. You can always thin them out later by putting out some seed and having another whole crop come in July, August, September.
Jess, thank you very much. And let's now go to Marge in Albany. Marge.
Hi. I am struggling with a 25, 30-year-old wisteria tree. It's spreading all over my yard. I trim it a couple times a year, you know, to keep it back, and then I give it a really good trim, like right now. I see that the root is also starting to get maybe a hole in it. Maybe it's rotting a little bit. And I think I just want to take it down. Is there anything that you would say to me to change that? I mean, I've loved it for all these years, but because it's growing all over my yard now, I'm kind of tired of it.
Yeah, I guess I'd try to change your mind. I'd give it a crack. I would say that I also have had wisteria over here at the Arboretum, and it's kind of a similar thing. It's taken over, and I got to do something with ours this year, too. It's taken over one of the buildings pretty heavily and some nearby trees, too. The good thing about wisteria, and this may be the quick way to maybe change your mind, is that you can cut it back quite heavily, and especially if you're not willing to if you're already thinking, hey, maybe I'm going to take it out, well, it's worth a shot. So you could, you know, usually we say, you know, no more than 25 or 30%. But in the late winter, you can kind of do this, you know, sort of when the apple trees are being pruned around the area and sort of late winter, February. Take it back, maybe half of it. Just cut it back to the main vine stems that are coming out. Take all the crazy growth away. And see what kind of regrowth you get. And it may very well produce some of the nicest flowers you've ever seen once you do that really heavy prune. Ours usually doesn't prune too well or bloom too well until every 2 or 3, 4 years I got to go in there and cut it back really hard. And then usually that following couple of years, it's magnificent, and you're always glad you didn't take it out. So I'd say before you take it out, give it a real good hard prune, not afraid of it, take it back pretty aggressively, late winter, see what it does. In a couple of years, if you really feel the same way, then I think, you know, there's no turning it back. But otherwise, at least give
it
a shot.
I'm at the second one. About 5 years okay. ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I really, really trimmed it down. And I thought,
all right,
this is it. It's either going to make it or it's not going to make it. It came back. It came back beautiful. But that almost seemed to accelerate.
Sometimes
the others,
it does. It kind of reinvigorates them. Yep.
I would say that, you know, gardening is art.
Yep.
And if you are wanting to create something new there, that's okay.
Well, that's a good way to end the show. Well done all. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward, thanks for being here, guys.
You got it. Great show, Ray. Greg, good job. Talk to you guys soon.
We will talk to you soon. Support comes from the VNA and Hospice of the Southwest Region, providing home health and hospice care since 1946 throughout Bennington and Rutland counties. Vermont, visitingnurses.org. At Studio KTM Organic Hair Salon, Red Hook, taking reservations for private, one customer in the salon at a time appointments with cutter and colorist Kristen Marquette, studiokTM.com. Once again, thanks to Greg Ward and Fred Breglia for being on the line with us today. Thank you for calling. Apologies to the many of you who didn't get your calls in or your email questions in. We will do it again very soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Charlene Knight took the calls. Our producers, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we welcome back a Food Friday favorite, Kizzy Williams-Francisco of Ali B's. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.